This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Carm Capriotto here, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts with an industry roundtable discussion. Now, if you want to catch the video, head to my Carm Capriotto YouTube channel and don't forget to click subscribe. You can watch it in action. Now, the passion my panel has for this industry is really hard to miss. In this episode, they touch base on topics including labor rates, the professionalism of our industry, and the importance of DVIs, just to name a few. And we're only just scratching the surface of these issues and concerns, but it's what is needed, I believe, to spark real change. Hey, thanks to our partner Shopware for providing you this episode. You know, every piece of paper that you touch adds up to seconds, minutes, and even hours of your staff's time. Get paper out of your business and unlock your employees' potential with Shopware's digital shop management software on the web at getshopware.com. If you're attending ASTE this September, don't forget to come and say hi. I'd love to meet you and also catch up with some old friends. And thanks for realizing that the podcast is the aftermarket's best kept secret to personal networking. Let's meet my panel. Look at this. Greg Buckley from Buckley's Personalized Auto Care, Wilmington, Delaware. Hello, Greg.
Carm, how you doing, man? We got a star-studded cast here today.
Oh, we are star-studded. All right. Gene Marilla's here, Certified Automotive in Glendora, California. Hey, Gene.
Hey, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
John Manilis, Auto Care Plus, New Hampshire, Maine. How many shops now, John?
Only seven.
Did you hear that?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you here. We've had John and his wife on before. Everybody's been on the show before, but a great couple of episodes we've done together. And Donnie Hudson from Troy Auto Care, Troy, Michigan. Hello, Donnie.
Hi, guys. Hi, Carm. Gentlemen, always honored to be on your program. It's always a big honor for me.
Hey, guys, I know that you guys are soapbox guys, you know, that you're absolutely willing to take stands on things, be it social media, talking to your peers in your networking groups, and none of you are without an opinion on something in the industry to make it better. They have submitted to me some talking point ideas just so that I kind of have an idea of where they're going, and this is open forum. And so I'm just going to kind of sit in the back and let this thing go. One of the things that Greg brought us was things about labor. And I mean, there's so much to talk about, guys, on labor. I was at a meeting yesterday morning from Independence here in Buffalo, a breakfast meeting, and they discussed labor rates. And it was interesting to see some variance bigger than I expected and then what they thought that the dealers were at. And all of this is stuff that we can control if we have something great to sell. Greg, let's start the conversation off on labor.
You know, it's an interesting situation. I mean, over the past few years, we've all dedicated a lot of our time and thinking to, you know, labor rates, cost of labor, all of that. And, you know, some of us have taken a situation and made our model more labor-centric than part-centric. So, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, I've looked at it like, well, we can't control the price of the oil we buy, the parts we buy, the rent we pay, and all that other stuff. But the one thing that we do have in our control is the cost of our labor, or, you know, how we price our labor. It's a commodity. Most of us have probably put it on the top line of our accounting sheets, and we look at it like, you know, cost of goods. So in that respect, what I look at is, okay, how do we protect it? How do we market it? Why do we? And put the factors on the labor side than more on the parts side, because let's face it, you know, there's so much transparency in the marketplace, and we do our best, you know, to kind of like not make it so transparent, you know, with the way that we build our work orders and, you know, one price for everything and the way we announce and, you know, solicit that job to the client. You know, gives us the opportunity to really focus on the labor. We have done it for the last 2.5 years. We kind of convert it to that model, and we've seen some very good success with doing so. And we want to continue to do that.
Something that we can control, guys. You agree?
100%.
Yes, 100%. It's the most profitable item we sell, and we do a very poor job of inventorying it. Mm-hmm. We let minutes walk out the door daily. Minutes add up to hours, and at the end of the week, it's a significant amount of labor dollar leaks that are going out in our industry. And, you know, we got some of our highest paid guys, you know, people are making in the $40 an hour range now in some places. And, you know, highly trained guys, and we're not charging for their time when they're on the job. And it is where we're losing most of our money. I when I got in this industry 20 years ago, I first thing I noticed was we should be more proud of what we do, and we should sell parts at cost, and we should be, you know, charging labor at $300-$400 an hour, like a doctor, like a lawyer. Because again, you can go on the internet and say, "Oh, I can buy that radiator for $100. Why are you selling it to me for $200?" And why have that discussion? You can't put a price tag on our ability, right? So that's where I come from. So tracking it is very, very important, and you got to get your service advices to understand how important that is. And that's why I mentioned effective labor rate in my list, because trying to prove to your technician, I mean, to your service advisors, when they say, "Oh, you can't charge $150 an hour," in their mind, and then you show them all of the labor that you do over the day, and you say, you know, you add in oil changes and state inspections and whatever else or low dollar fixed price stuff, how that brings your actual door rate average way down. And so when they sit there and tell you, "Well, it's $150 an hour," well, no, it's not. It's actually $95.
What are you guys doing to bring effective labor rate up to the team? Is it a number you work with weekly and show everyone? And is anyone bonus to grow that as close to your door rate as possible?
We go over it every week in our manager meetings, and we bring focus to things that we want to make change to. And yeah, that's how we do it.
One of the things that was really striking, and actually I learned this from Goldman Sachs, the time I was at Goldman Sachs and learning through their processes, is that we had a sheet. We broke down the responsibilities, kind of like the processes that it took to get a work order out the door, customer satisfied, money in the bank. And we took the tech team and we had them write down all the responsibilities of the service advisors. We took the service advisors and had them do the same for the techs. They all came together, and the discrepancies were immense. I mean, there were huge misunderstandings on what it took to create the work order from the SA side. The SA clearly didn't really understand the steps it took to fix a car. So when we all got together, we looked at it, and you know, it's just in this big wide sheet, and it broke down the processes little by little. And then finally, we came together, "Okay, guys, now you know how each of us are supposed to work. This is how we want to be able to protect our dollars and our profits." And so it put us on a better page where, you know, our effective labor rate is like $4 shy of our door rate. And that's verified with, you know, my coach. And we continue to impress him and continue to excel and focus on that. So I think it's educating your team in multiple directions to have them understand the importance of it, and you know, and just build from there.
That's what I'd like to know. How do you corral it?
In my shop, Carm, we have a formula that everybody is trying to adhere to. As you have 8 hours in a day, you have a man on the floor for 8 hours. They can't physically work every minute of the day, so we expect 7.2 hours per day of production at 125% efficiency, and that would equal 9 hours a day production. So if everybody in your company understands that formula and works towards that, and like John brought up, if you're not tracking, there's tons of different programs that will track your technicians. The challenge we ran into was technicians aren't used to that. You hire a new guy and they have no idea what time tracking is or what time is. They were always, "Here's a job, do it as fast as you can." Well, in our newer, modern, more professional organizations, we're going, you know, we track every minute of the day, the E time, tool truck time, lunch time, and it really gets to be a challenge until your technician understands why and how much more money they can make by tracking their time and being efficient.
Yeah, and we make it a point to explain to them what the cost of the minute is that they just wasted. It's $5 a minute, right? And so at the end of the day, if you're looking for 7.2, you know, productive hours or 8 hours, or if they're only producing 4 hours, you know, you have 4 hours of just So what can you do with that 4 hours tomorrow? Can you sell it tomorrow? No, you can't. You lost it. It was on the shelf today and you didn't sell it. Not like the oil filter, you can sell it tomorrow, right? You're going to get your money back. The labor, you, every minute you lose, it's gone.
I have to say, first of all, it has to start with the owner. And John, you made a good point, is finding out where you're losing that. And I actually just started getting honed in on minutes walking out the door, because there's a lot of minutes walking out the door. I had to fully understand that. So I'm in this focus group with Vin Waterhouse, and we've been actually doing that, counting, because you're right, minutes turn into dollars. And it was in, so one of the things that we created is the 15 most repetitive jobs, and where we could start shaving 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And oh my gosh, in the week, you're talking hours. You're talking a lot of productive money that was walking out the door. I never realized as owner, I got so many things in the fire. I never sat down and started analyzing and breaking down our labor time, our technicians time, you know, the service advisor time, and processing that work order, something Greg you alluded to, that, you know, as a business owner, you need to sit down and take just a few minutes. And a lot of shops are busy, we're all shorthanded, we're all facing parts deficits, we just don't have time. Well, this is time in your business that you need to value. I didn't know that until I you know, joining that group really helped me understand the not so much micromanaging portion of it, but dollars walking out the door. I mean, that's, and as a shop owner, you'd be surprised. I was blown away at how, and I just, you know, as one of my first challenges for the week, I just had to sit and just count without saying anything, without making any corrections, and seeing how many hours walked out the door. And in 1 week, I had 11 non-productive hours walk out the door, and crap, just normal road testing, and, you know, and just all kinds of things. It's so, you know, making things, you know, I love the 125% efficiency Gene made. We're striving for that. That's, you know, you are 100% on goal if you're at 125. That's incredible. And we're not there yet, but my team's working towards that. But, you know, I had no idea. So as an owner, you need to sit down and evaluate that and watch how many minutes are walking out the door. It's incredible.
Yeah, and most of these, you know, 20 groups that we have probably all been in, I mean, that's where you learn this stuff. And that's where I learned it. I mean, in our group, you know, we target 138% efficient. We target, you know, 90% productivity. And these are the numbers that we share every month when we get together. And, you know, and how do you affect those numbers? And, you know, it's little things. Every technician in my shop has a tablet. They have a PC. You know, we have Skype. We communicate via Skype. And I see a technician walking up to the front counter. That's all kinds of minutes wasted. I said, if you're not turning a wrench, it's $5 a minute. Do not walk up to the front counter. You Skype the message. They've got two phones in their ear. They don't have time to listen to you anyway. Just send them the Skype. Now it's in writing. They have it. They can refer to it. And you can keep wrenching. And that's, those things add up to so many hours at the end of the week that people don't realize.
Guys, a question. How much is scheduling have to do with this?
I'm not a scheduler. I like to take everything we can and sort it out later. We create chaos. So,
see, I'm different. I'm the plan guy, and we've been experimenting with the night before, and for 3 days, we build an actual plan of how many hours and cars and what's on the schedule, and it's still kind of in the works, but it's been kind of a little chaotic, but my advisors are getting it. So our minimum goal is 8 hours per day. We expect each technician to produce 12 hours a day. So we load every technician up with 12 hours worth of work, whether it's expected in, whether it's an appointment. So they know ahead of time, my technician knows he's getting 4 cars with all these hours. And then we have to make room for the upsell work as well. And that goes back to the promise the same day type of thing. We try not to promise anything the same day that's sold, so we have time to, you know, get the work done. I don't know. I'll let you know later if this plan thing works out or not, but it works to me in my head, but I'm kind of a little goofy guy that expects very high standards from all my staff, and it's challenging to get your staff to be you. And my guys are working really hard to try and make it work. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
Again, John, this isn't for you, but if you schedule Diag, you know, testing in the mornings and the hard work in the afternoon, is it up to the service advisor to build his schedule by tech to optimize that? If you're doing it, Gene, the service advisor and the tech are pretty much married to this level of success.
Well, it's working at a certain level so far. We still have some clunkiness. You know, the hard part is days past, a water pump was 2 hours worth of labor. Today, an Explorer water pump is 12 hours worth of labor. So now you've got one man tied up for a day. So that kind of throws your schedule all out of whack when you sell a 12 or 13 hour job and you have them planned for this other work that's already coming in. So again, I'm not a real fan of the chaos. I've been through that. I've been here 43 years. We work forever on chaos. Puts too much stress on me, my guys, my techs. And if you're going to keep good techs, you want to keep the stress off of them, in my opinion.
Well, the stress is all on the front counter, not on the technicians. So in my world, anyway.
Well, I'm kind of like learning how to be more subdued, because John, I, and Gene, like maybe some of us, I lived in chaos. It was always yes, 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 yes. I bring my son on board and he's going, Dad, we can't scale with chaos. And when he said that to me, because he has a very controlled manner of doing it, you know, where his world comes in and he's got it perfectly scheduled. Now, sometimes, you know, over a period of the last week or so, he will throttle back, which is a mistake. And we've talked about it. So we like Gene, you know, we're trying to find that balance of, you know, we need the hours. You need the talent, and we're a guy short currently for the next few weeks. So, you know, it's a balancing act. You're constantly striving to hit that perfect level.
It's managed chaos, I guess, the way I would like to prefer to call it. We have resources, and we have finite resources like everybody else, and we have to, you know, plan for that. And so, what you know, we don't make promises we can't, you know, deliver on. So our job is to give the customer hope when they call in. And yes is going to be the answer. And we have various ways of knowing our customer, knowing if it's a new customer, knowing, you know, what that yes actually means. And then, you know, yeah, we'll get a look at your car. But we're not promising we can repair it today because we don't know what we're in for yet until we look at it. But you know what? I'm going to give you some hope. Yes, get it down here and we'll get a look at it. And then we'll give you an idea of what's next. And as opposed to having the bad attitude and the tone in your voice, oh my God, we're so busy. I can't possibly take in another car. And then what do? They have a headache today. They're going to call the next shop. Even if they're a loyal customer. Right now, they have a headache. And when I have a headache and I call my doctor and he says, I got to wait 3 weeks, I get another doctor.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's the expectations. And that exactly right there, John, is the battle that I have with my son and the other advisor as well. Because if they see that we're overbooked, they won't take anybody in, even if it is for a case of, hey, let's see if we can take a look at it. Just get them onto the lot. And I think that's where they need to understand, or he needs to understand a little bit.
Well, and for us, the paradigm has shifted big time. For me being a technician, you know, chaos was king, you know, feed me, feed me, feed me. And as these older techs are cycling out and you're bringing in the 20 and 30 year olds, they're totally not into feed me, feed me, feed me. They're into, you know, give me some jobs. I want structure. You know, I want, they won't come in early. They won't stay late. They will if you ask them, but they won't do it on their own. Like, you know, when we were growing up, you'd always be at the shop early. You'd always stay late. You'd work part through your lunch and you'd make the money, money, money. And these young people today, in my world anyways, in Southern California, are a little more structured. They want a little more, you know, here's how we do things. And they don't want to be beat up every minute of the day like we did.
That's so true, Gene. So true.
It is. I've got some young guys that are, you know, they know it's a toll on their body, 35 years old, and they want to stop wrenching. They just want to do the high level stuff. So,
yep.
I think the triangle of labor to client expectation to tech willingness is all like coming together. And, you know, you can see how one affects the other, you know, and I have what's funny about all this conversation is, you know, I've interviewed three dealer techs over the last 2 weeks or so, and a lot of them are not getting hours. You know, they are leaving, desiring to leave because, you know, the more tenured tenured technicians, the senior techs, are getting most of the hours. And, you know, this morning I was thinking about, well, there's not many hours. How many hours can there actually be in a new car dealership when they're not selling cars to PDI them, right? So there's minor hours missing. There's not much service work in terms of what are you going to get on a new car that do come in. You've got warranty work, which, you know, some dealers may or may not pay. So I'm starting to see, or in my experience, which is very limited because I seldom have to hire, and this has been a hell of a curve for me, that there's a lot of dissatisfaction in the dealership world. And then you look at what we have in the independent aftermarket and how well we're starting to come around to compensate fairly, very fair. And we're looking for the talent, and our structure is different. And it seems to fit. I go back to Gene, what you're saying. It seems to be a more comfortable fit. Now, I mean, I could be totally wrong on this, but it just feels like we may be getting to a really good spot in a business model that can sustain us for quite some time and, you know, showcase us.
Greg, you're 100% right. I have a guy starting for me on Monday at my new shop, the Troy Auto and Truck Center we just opened up. He come from a Ford dealer. He's 21 years at the Ford dealer. He said he's done. He's done with that life. He's looking for structure. He's looking for a change of morale. He goes, he's done with the dealership life. 21 years. So we sat down, and I couldn't match what he was making. But when he seen everything else that was on the table, what we offer, he was like well on board. But he said, I just need to get out of that environment. I'm tired out of that environment. And he goes, you'll probably have three or four techs following you. I hope that's the trend, because we in the Detroit market area, we are screaming for techs. We are hurting right. for techs. And yeah, I you're 100% right.
Great discussion so far. Thrilled and happy. So everyone knows who's going to Apex. They just announced the whole vaccine protocol, and you've seen it all over, and people keep asking me about it. I'm not going to read it to you, but it's out there on a lot of the magazine sites, so check that up. Greg, you were saying?
Donnie, what was interesting is that I looked at my budget, and I could afford this tech and at the same time offer him 33% more in a guaranteed structure than he was making at the dealership. And this gentleman was an intermediate level tech, two or three ASEs. He was responsible for a lot of the electrical testing and diagnostics that were going on there. And he was just totally dissatisfied. And he admitted, I'm just getting grinded down with no place to go. So I just looked at it like, wow, man, I have never worked in a dealership operation. I really have no finger on the pulse of what they do. You know, I've been totally in this aftermarket all my life. And so I hear these things, and yet and all of us are on boards, and we hear from, you know, others in the independent side, how well we're doing in taking care of these young men and women who are looking for a better way to a promising, rewarding career. And it's actually kind of exciting. When I got down to thinking about it, I go, well, this is a hell of an opportunity for us.
Chicago's having some kind of strike of technicians at dealerships, right? And the story is the independent went down to the picket line at one of the places and said, so what's going on? Well, we're holding out for this. And apparently they 100% voted against the proposal, one of the most recent proposals. And the independent said, you know, what are you guys looking for? Blah, blah, blah. We can do this and we can do that. And we have health care and we have 401k and we have all this. And the dealer techs are saying, really? We didn't know.
Because they don't. Because nobody's out there telling them that. You're right. You're absolutely right, Carm. You're absolutely right. And that's what we need to do is get that message out in front of them. Because, yes, you're right, Greg. We can compete with everything we offer. His number that he was making per hour, I couldn't compete with yet. But in due time, we will. But when I laid out everything else we offer, it's like, wow, I didn't know aftermarket small shops. This is unbelievable. I didn't know you guys offered that. I mean, our list of benefits, just I'm sure, is all you guys are top notch. Go on and on. He says that is nothing like at the dealership. And then he told me the environment that dealerships are, which I never experienced, obviously, because I've been in the aftermarket world my whole life with my dad. And yeah, I was blown away. So you're 100% right. But that's the message we need to get out. Our independent shops offer much more, plus the personal touch with the technicians versus a dealership. That guy told me, he made a good example. He told me, you know what I was? I was a machine. They rented me. And my foreman told me that. I was a machine. I rent you. You do what you're told. You don't have conversation. I mean, I was blown away. I could not imagine an environment like that. That's, I don't, I've never, even in my fire station, I mean, we're all brotherhood, man. It just, I was blown away.
And if you think dealerships are bad, I interviewed a gentleman from who works for the city government. Oh my goodness. Was he getting, you talk about a machine. This man, the difference between the city and whatever government is that they give you, they load you up with benefits and they pay you crap. And this guy loved the benefits, but here he was having to do side jobs in order to make pay to pay the bills. And he was responsible for trash trucks, heavy duty stuff. And guys, he was making $21 an hour plus benefits. And I'm like, so you get up in the middle of the night, you're required to do a 4-hour stint if they call you on an emergency run. And you're responsible to work in snow, rain, no overtime, and all this for $21 an hour. And he goes, yeah. I go, okay, well, you know, I probably can double that right now, you know, if we work out. But that's the kind of stuff that goes on that, you know what, Donnie, you said they may not know. Well, maybe our independent side, maybe a lot of owners don't know how competitive they can be.
Right. So that's exactly what I'm leading to, Greg. Right.
Exactly. So
100%.
I mean, that's an education process, guys. I mean, that to me, I can't tell you how many prospective shop owner technicians who wanted to buy their own shop or start their own shop over the years that I've had. I try to mentor them and guide them, and they get their head wrapped around, oh, but I have to pay my own health insurance, $1,500 a month. That stops them from going into business because people are so like trained to like, oh, you got to get benefits. You got to get, no, you don't. You can get compensated in other ways. So.
To me, it sounds like I'm living for the pension. I can work 20 years and then live on the pension and then do something else. And I think that could be part of the attraction of government.
It was for his wife. His wife was more determined and more intrigued or looked for benefits outside of pay. So, you know, you do have to educate. I had to tell this man, you know, John, like you said, listen, you have to work two jobs to get where you need to go. And I'm telling you, my guys here don't work two jobs. I frown on side work. And I say they own their own houses. They own multiple cars. They own their tools. I go, we learn how to make money and profit and live a great lifestyle. Maybe we don't know how good we can offer, you know, in the negotiation process versus what's there, you know, in front of us. I think we can be extremely with what I experience. I am not afraid to talk to anybody, tell anybody what I can offer, because I know more than likely it's going to be damn good compared to what they're at right now.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, are you leaving money on the table by not implementing DVIs? Consider this your wake-up call. When it comes to servicing vehicles, you're crushing it. Your techs are skilled, their work is top-notch, but something is missing. Shopware, an industry-leading shop management system, could be your secret weapon. Not only does the SMS eliminate busy work for your skilled technicians, but it improves your customer service experience as well. Can you already see those 5-star reviews? If you schedule a call with a Shopware rep, they can show you the endless examples of 5-star reviews their SMS is driving for hundreds of auto shops around the country. How do they do it? Well, for starters, they have an easy-to-use interface that allows estimates to be reviewed and approved on any device. Can you say cha-ching? We all know that the best customers are the ones that keep coming back. Book a demo with my friends at GetShopware.com to see how their software can drive repeat business for your shop. We've moved into career. To me, that we've evolved into talking about careers. And everywhere I go, every business that I see is looking for peoples. No argument there, right? Everybody. Here in Buffalo, fast coffee, fast food, $16 an hour, guys. So your guy making 20, 21 isn't too far ahead of being a coffee jockey, right? Or a French fryer. And I was at the county fair. I saw a business with a sign careers. Donnie, I think about in the Napa organization, the business development groups. Why aren't the business development groups out with a sign career opportunities wherever they possibly can? And it reminds me, guys, when back in the 70s, I was in the National Guard. Guess what they had me do? A recruiter at the malls to get the Vietnam veterans to come back into the Guard. Why aren't we out talking careers with anybody willing to walk by? You'll find an apprentice, you'll find a dealership person, you'll find somebody from HVAC. You'll find these. To me, I think this could be a grassroots effort.
Oh, we have to. You're right. We have to be. I had my GM go out to a, you know, to a vocational, you know, school and do just that. To prospective automotive students and HVA students, you know, they don't know what they want to do yet. They're still in high school, right? But you know, when you show them that there's a path after school to make, you know, lots of money, more money than, you know, I went to school for engineering. You know, technicians can make more than engineers. That's the reality, but that's not what, you know, we teach them in school. You got to go to college. You got to do this. I think getting out there, going to job fairs at this point, you know, just getting to, it's like networking, right? You gotta talk to people. You gotta get their ear, and they may not know anything about automotive, and they might be, you know, mechanically inclined and say, well, I could go to school for that and I can make $100,000 a year. Yeah.
All right, Carm, you got me fired up. I was looking for a star to give you because we were going to talk about this. So we did that just this past weekend. So my business development group, we were on Woodward for the Woodward Dream Cruise, which is a big, big thing here in Michigan. Attracts over 1 million people. They shut down a major road that was years ago for hot rodding and racing, and they bring all these cars out. And we did our very first time. We weren't concentrating on the customer, although we still had flyers and we were still gearing towards the customer. We opened up a new avenue, and it was a career path avenue. So we actually had onboard quick applications, and we did it for our Napa auto care centers. We also did it for Napa drivers or counter people who's interested in selling parts and being a driver for Napa. So we did it as co-branded for Napa and for Napa Auto Care. And actually, tomorrow at 1 o'clock on Saturday, my wife Christy's going to be interviewing a technician apprentice or somebody who picked up our application on Woodward, who's looking to get into the field. Had some auto classes in high school. We also went to the career schools, and we were also pushing. And we, like, one of the things that we're going to be doing, we're on boards with a college that's going to get ready to launch in our area, and each of our BDG groups are going to actually teach a class, but we're going to have, when they do career days, we're going to be starting to set up there. But you're absolutely right. We were behind. This industry's been behind in that, because you're absolutely right. You go to any place that had these career fairs, they got police departments, we got fire departments, all these things, but you never see one for automotive or technicians. And we're going to change that. We set up the Napa tent. We talked to them about it. Here's where you're at. Here's what you can do. Here's, you know, it's, yes. So we're hitting that now. A little late in the game, in not, at least in our area, but we're on it now.
Your state too, your Department of Labor. We just hired an on-the-job training person who has an interest in automotive, wants to get into automotive. You know, they're going to pay us to have a mentor train them, and you know, and they're going to work part time. And it's from all walks. And this person happens to have a learning disability, but they can still work on cars. And you know, there's other people who are transitioning from. You know, it could have been from, you know, work release program, could have been, you know, they had a troubled past. It could be that they're changing careers. Could be that they're retired from a government job and now they're getting retrained to go back out in the field in another industry. So there's a lot of that opportunity.
This seems to land itself right into Gene Morrill's mind here about the professionalism of our industry, Gene.
Absolutely, it does. What I see is our industry and our shop owners not being proud of their industry and their craft and taking it maybe as seriously as they could. The unfortunate part is anybody can open an auto repair business and they don't really need to be trained, have tools, be licensed, have anybody certified, and they can work on cars and call themselves, you know, a mechanic shop, at least in my area. There's no mandatory certification, required tools, anything. You can be a, you know, a gardener one day and a mechanic the next day working on cars. And you know, it's really sad. Every organization out there belongs to a professional group that helps mold their industry, except for auto. And, you know, in California, especially Southern California, where I am, we have 30,000 shops in California, and our automotive association has 500 members. That's a tragedy. If our organization had half that amount of shops, then they could have the horsepower, the money to either hire or get a volunteer to go out and do exactly what you're talking about, is to hit these trade shows, these fairs, and help our organization statewide, nationwide, you know, get together and fill the holes that we've created over all these years and never paid attention to, because we're not a, you know, a professional industry and a group. And I just really hate that we have, I don't know, dozens of organizations that either compete with each other, don't communicate with each other, don't work towards a common goal. And right now, of course, the 911 emergency is technicians in our shops and parts stores. Everybody should be jumping up and down and trying to work together to put that out there. And I hear shops all the time, I'm totally for mandatory certification licensing of an owner and a shop and the technicians. Now, if you mention that to any many people on our organization, they go, government control, can't do it. Well, it's not government control. We can control our own destiny if we want to, but because older owners don't want it, we sit on our hands and just take what we can get. And that takes the value of the shop and puts it way down compared to having, you know, a professional shop and going forward. I'm sorry, I'm going a little long, but this is something that I'm really passionate about. I think every single shop should belong to some kind of organization. I think the training companies should be responsible for at least meeting and talking and giving new shops, old shops that aren't part of an organization, a little taste of training and how it could be, and parts stores could even be a part of this and subsidize it if we have to. But if we're not out there helping these shops that aren't part of anything get on board, or at least helping them and giving them information, then I think we're failing as an industry. And it's tough because I'm like anybody else. I'm in my company. We're running. You know, you're the duck on the pond floating along, but your feet are going 100 miles an hour, like they say. And it's really tough. That's why we need organizations and professional people that we can either pay or love it to do what we need to do. Sorry.
I want to jump in on that, Gene. You made a million great points. First of all, as an owner, you need to be passionate about your business. You need to be proud. I'm proud every time I walk through my shop's door. But it all has to do with your attitude. If you're passionate and proud, that's going to rub off. Attitude is everything, including your employees. You come in upset, man, how many we got today? Oh, wow, it's going to be another one of those days. That drags the whole mood down. But coming in, being passionate, being upbeat, that goes a long way. And you're 100% right, Gene. That's why I preach. You know, I'm very big into business development groups, because together with so many shops together, we can accomplish so much. When you're by yourself, you can accomplish a little bit, but you don't have the backbone, the support. You can't do these things. You can't do everything. But the more shops you have together, the more, friendships and everything that you develop being involved with a business development group, you can go out and share ideas. You're not out there by yourself, and you're being involved with organizations. We hire talent to come in and preach at our meetings and talk to our groups. And I love seeing new shops come on board and help them, guide them. One of my proudest moments being a business development group president in my group is seeing these young shops just come aboard and see them just excel. Now they're two shop owners. They've grown. And that's because we all come together. We share ideas, share best practices. We're passionate about our business, and that's the message we need to send to other shops.
And part of the young professionalism that Gene kind of was talking about was the fact that in many communities where you're reaching out to ask them to come to a local networking group, no one wants to play in that sandbox because they have secrets they don't want to share.
Right, and there's none. There's none. There's no secrets. We're all in this business together. There is so many customers. We share so many things. Nobody's going to steal anything, and that's the hardest part is to get guys talking. One of the first things I did is said, I made them. I gave them spotlights on their shop, and they had to tell me three things that they think they do that's distinctive and unique about their shop. And we started getting that. And guess what? We all learned from it. I park every one of our customers' cars that's completed on an angle so the customer can come right in, jump in the car, and pull right out. That was given to me by another friend of mine. One of the things we do is our shop always smells homely. So whatever season or whatever fragrance we're in, you come into any one of my shops and it smells like that. Now all of our shops give that. It's all about presentation, but you're right. You're 100% right. Man, now you got me fired up.
Donnie, I want to stop. I want to get ready to go to segment C, but I'll bet you there's some pumpkin spice coming up real soon.
Apples and spice, baby.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Pumpkin spice is going in everything today. Let me just help toss this segment C up in the air for a minute and kind of summarize what I just heard the last 5 minutes. Genius, you mentioned free training. Do you know how much free training was offered during COVID in the early points of COVID? More than anyone could possibly imagine, from technical to business management. In the early part of it, people showed up, but then the apathy started to rule. Zoom burnout started to happen. So there was a lot of training, Gene, for certain peoples, but what we ended up with is a lot of apathy, the same apathy we had before COVID. It's kind of right back in the saddle. And I also believe this, and in fact, I've had a lot of discussions in the last week and a half about the supplier service aftermarket partnering. And I believe we really need to reach out to our suppliers and we need to have a much better and stronger relationship with them, because I believe they can help elevate the professionalism of our industry. Each store may have 5 to 8 really top class A first call customers, and that's it. They may have 100 customers, but they only have a small percentage of top ones. What can they do to help us through networking groups, through the discussions that we're having, bring in more people to get to that higher professional level? And I just throw that out. Either you want to talk about it or it's just there to, you know, like a hanging chad. I just put it out there.
Well, Carm, I agree. There was a lot of free training, and what I saw, a lot of technical training. And what I would like to see is, you know, the owners either, you know, have a visit or a phone call or a one-on-one with, you know, what numbers could be, what the possibilities are, you know, them making in their shop. Most of them are so afraid to raise the labor rate. It's scary. The people I talk to all the time, they're such low labor rate that they can't ever afford to hire anybody or give a benefit or do everything they need to do to be a good owner. So they'll never make any money. They have, you know, the perpetual job, which is just over broke. They work their whole lives just making enough money to survive. When it comes time to retire, they don't have anything. And God bless everybody. And I was one of those guys for a long time. So I'm speaking from experience that I worked a job for many, many years until I was able to hook up with the correct folks that could show me a different way to do auto repair.
Hey, let me change the topic. John, I want to bring you in about digital inspections. You know, a pet peeve that I have is that there's just not enough still in our industry that have embraced this.
No, I agree. I mean, that's why, I mean, we finally embraced it, and then it took us a good 2 years to fine tune it and actually get everybody on board, everybody across all 7 stores. I mean, which is no easy task with some old dinosaurs. And we finally got it dialed in, and we got everybody kicking on 80% or better sent rates to the customers. And, you know, we're hitting high in the 90s for every car getting an inspection, every car getting 15 photos and or videos, or, you know, minimum. And the important part is it's getting sent to the customer. And that, you know, again, when I go back to when I was actually on the counter many years ago, and I think about the one time I had this, I explained this to the customer ad nauseum, and, you know, that they needed to fix their car and the severity of it and all this stuff. she denied all the repair, not all of them, but some of them, and then came in, and I went over the our physical check sheet we were doing back then and showed her the colors, you know, the red, yellow, green, and she said, I can't have any red on my car. I said, well, we talked about this. But when she saw it, she made us stay late because she was going on a trip that weekend. We fixed the car. We did the rest of the work. But it took her to actually physically, I guess back then I could have faxed it to her. But anyway, fast forward to the world we live in today, and we have this digital tool that is, I can't tell you how much work it sells. I can tell you that it, across our stores, $98 is what our average ticket went up. And you know, any of you guys who are in these groups where you try to move your average ticket or your average build hours, you know, a tenth is a big deal. Trying to move a $5 average RO, this is $100 across the board. Some are higher, some are a little bit lower, but that's a significant, and there's no change in labor rates or part pricing. And it was all just showing somebody that their tires, and then having a conversation and education about their tires. Hey, your tires are at 230 seconds. I told these people this on the phone. As soon as I send them the picture, I get the text back saying, yeah, go ahead and put tires on that. I didn't realize they were that bad. Because he told me on the phone, I can wait. When I told him it was 230 seconds, I can wait. I sent up the picture. Oh, no. Yeah, get those done. It's just seeing is believing.
So we hear these stories over and over and over and over and over again. And I bet you if we pick up the phone and call our great DVI software people, they'd still say we're probably 25% of the industry that are doing it. Why?
A lot of shop owners may not understand that you've got the front side retail portion of DVIs. However, a lot of us don't realize the collateral that we're collecting and how valuable that is to our marketing strategies, especially with Google. And, you know, I make, and during my days of coaching, you know, the marketing thing, I emphasize the fact that, you know, all of the material that you're collecting through those tablets and iPads is stuff that you can harvest and put online on your Google My Business page, one a day, two a day, a picture of a broken whatever, a leaking whatever, a flat tire with a short story does wonders for your organic search. And so when you look at the total value of a DVI, some guys will say it takes up time, right? Okay, my team isn't fast enough. Well, guess what? They are once you train them properly to get it done and you get the buy-in and you annotate properly. You know, your conversion rates go much higher, as John is mentioning. But the backside of that is that you already have built-in material to send for the next prospect and the next client. So, you know, there's multiple reasons to get involved with a good DVI and learn it. You know, the first thing, like I said, make sure your good hardware is there. You get involved with one ecosystem, meaning one operating system that the whole team can understand and work around. And set your processes and go from there. It is a total game changer and a total win-win-win.
I'm in 100% agreement. So seeing is believing for me. I've seen it in the business. I've seen it in the customers. The customers are the ones who make the and it makes it so much easier to then have a text messaging platform where you can talk to your customer. You don't have to waste their time picking up the phone. Because once you're in tune with, you're going to text them a digital inspection report. You know, it's a game changer for the customer. They're just so impressed that, you know, nobody does this. And, you know, I don't know why nobody does it, because we do it and the customers, they notice it everywhere I've been. I've never seen this.
You know, I heard one of the greatest summaries right here on social media, Facebook. Connor Tracy says, letting the car tell the story. DVI writes the tale for us. How powerful is that? I mean, is it maybe the problem is change? Maybe the uphill battle for acceptance. John, you mentioned it. Some of the old timers, we had to drag them over the line, right? But the more I hear the creativity in creating, you know, this, I don't want to sit down in front of a computer and design this by myself. Okay, well, great. Take the one off the shelf and then let the team massage it over the course of the next 6 to 8 months. You know, we've had Greg on. Greg, I recall you doing some walk around stuff, you know, how to take a picture, how many pictures to have. I mean, think about, this is almost like a cottage industry. There's KPIs, management KPIs on DVIs. Listen, think of all the macronyms I just spouted out.
In some of your DVI solutions, all of that macro KPI is already there. It just depends on how much you want to really utilize it. But the main thing is look at your conversion rate and your increase in ARO. You know, that's the bottom line. And then you do have that trust factor. I mean, let's face it. When you can describe and show and tell, they understand what you're going through, how you got to proceed, what you're going to do. And again, we're all looking at client expectations, delivery times. Are there accentuating circumstances that, you know, we need to be put in, or the car may not be available today, it might be tomorrow, or let's plan this ahead. So it's a huge part of the modern shop business.
In my area, Carm, I think when I talk to folks that don't have it, probably the number one objection is cost, even though it's not a big cost. But you can go anywhere from $100 to an $800 DVI, depending on which company you go with. The second objection is so many of shops are used to taking in everything, like John. Everything comes in the door. I don't have time to inspect each car, versus building a plan and knowing you're going to spend 30 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever your time is, doing a really good inspection, and knowing you're going to sell 20, 30, 50% more. So you need that less car equals more dollars, less stress, less headaches, versus taking everything in and just doing the $100 or $200 ARO type of thing. And the third thing would be older guys are scared of technology.
I guess, I just said a quick number, 4,000 cars a year per shop, 28, I have 7 shops. Right, so that's what, 28,000 cars a year times $100 ticket average increase. That's $2.8 million in increased sales, just because of what is it? $100, $800, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, I know it's silly, but owners kind of justify, the way they do things by a dollar amount at the end of the month.
Right, but I think the trust factor that Greg was mentioning is, you know, we don't only just take pictures of the bad stuff. You know, we also show them that their tires are actually 9/32nds and they're good, and their battery's tested good, and the fluid actually looks good. It's not all, it's so that they can properly manage their budget and know what they have to plan for in the future, and it's not always bad.
Guys, have you found that your DVI, with all the positive and all the negative, makes the customer feel strongly about the home that they have with you, the client relationship, the trust? Do many people say, wow, this is the reason that I come here?
I think it's an amazing tool to offer that first-time client an amazing experience. We had a few in this week. You know, they came in, first-timers, never seen the vehicle, did just a blowout DVI. And even though they were just in for the basic oil change service, or the coupon special service, let's put it that way, the seasonal service. And they were so impressed. She said, can I get this for my second car? This was my husband's truck, and she's moving on from it. And it didn't matter. We highlighted everything that was there. She said, I want to bring my second car in to have this done as well. So I think that's an additional power point for that.
Hey, guys, thank you so much. An open forum here on a discussion. You guys nailed it. Thank you so much. I think we maybe covered 3 topics, but in my opinion, some extreme depth. And I heard a lot of passion. So thank you for being here. As always, always honored to have you guys. Greg Buckley from Buckley's Personalized Auto Care. Gene Murrell, Certified Automotive, Glendale, California. John Manilis, Auto Care Plus, New Hampshire, Maine, $98 increase in ARO because of DVI. And Donnie Hudson, Troy Auto Care, Troy, Michigan, out there preaching the word about our industry. Guys, thank you so much. Have a great, great weekend.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Donnie.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.